Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are releasing this on Easter Sunday, Resurrection Sunday, whatever you want to call it. This is our Easter Sunday episode for 2019. And
rise and shine.
So this is an interesting one. This is Jesus Day.
Yes.
But we're not talking about Jesus today. We've done.
No, we're talking about some other stuff.
Yeah, we're talking about some other stuff. All right, so here's what happened. In this week that just passed, it's called Holy Week, right? It started on Palm Sunday, goes throughout the week. The Passover happens on Thursday, and then Friday is Good Friday. Saturday is, I can't remember the name of it, but Sunday. Saturday. Yeah, Sunday is today. Okay, so I wanted to talk about that Passover situation.
Okay.
And the title of the show, as you saw, is witchcraft. And so we're going to talk about witchcraft on Easter. But the reason why this is relevant here, I'm going to tie this together. Just stick with me, y'all. This is not, you're like, why am I listening to it? You're probably not listening to it on Easter Sunday. So I know you couldn't take
y'all
it.
Y'all busy. But when y'all get to this, you're going to be like, what?
Okay. So humans have this curious idea of othering things that they are unfamiliar with.
Yes.
Okay. And this isn't exclusively a white supremacist view, because the Spanish did it during the Inquisition. And as they started to spread out in the world, they would encounter other, like Magellan would encounter people in the Philippines. And in the journals, they would discuss like how their interactions were. And so as they interacted with these other peoples, they would look at their religious practices. And because they were uninitiated, they didn't understand them. And so they called them devil worship.
Okay.
Now, that's going to tie back to Christianity in a second. But in one journal entry, it says, to sum it up, their idolatry, like that of many other nations, consists of adorning and considering as gods their ancestors, particularly men who were outstanding for their deeds of valor or cruelty. Okay. Now, on the surface, that makes sense to them. They're considering their ancestors as gods, but what they're really talking about is ancestor veneration. Okay. Lots of cultures do that.
Yep.
It makes sense that you revere your ancestors, and they become elevated because that's part of the grieving process of death. What's interesting is people now are coming in to view these practices, and they're saying, because they just don't understand them, they're saying, this is the work of the devil, or this is something else. And so we talked in the last episode about how they would just do away with all of it. Okay. So that's the idea we're going with. To the uninitiated, what does that religious practice look like? So at the Passover meal, Jesus blesses the bread and the wine. And so that practice becomes one of the sacraments of the Catholic Church, called the Eucharist. Now, in the Eucharist, what's believed is when the priest blesses the elements, which is the bread and the wine, Christ becomes the elements.
Yes.
This process is called transubstantiation. Christ somehow leaves where they believe the position is at the right hand of the Father and enters the bread and the wine. And so when a Catholic participates in this mass, which is what it's called, they are eating the body of Christ and they are drinking the blood of Christ. And they didn't used to drink it, but now they can drink it. So anyway, to the uninitiated, what does this look like? Okay, so yeah, it makes sense if you understand that this is communion and, you know, whatever, however you grew up, whether you see it as a symbolic thing. Catholics do not see this as symbolic. Like the sacrament is
what it is.
Christ being the body and the bread and the wine. So for transubstantiation for Catholics, that is cannibalism and vampirism.
Whew.
I know that's a controversial statement, but what I'm saying is from someone who does not understand that tradition.
Right.
How could they draw another conclusion?
That's what vampires did.
Exactly.
Right.
Not only are they drinking the blood.
You're eating his body.
You're eating the body. But with the blood.
That's what cannibals do.
You're drinking the blood as part of a process that is connected with eternal life. The same thing happens for vampires when they drink blood. So, again, this is super heretical. And if it feels heretical, imagine what that feels like to a culture who is being invaded by someone else and looking at their practices as devil worship and witchcraft.
And we turn around and look at you like, so what is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've just gone through a celebration where we've celebrated these elements, these sacraments of the church. You okay? You with me?
I am. Let me tell you, I'm not really, really bothered. I just want people to understand and open your mind to, like we say, if you don't have a lens for this, you're going to correlate it to what you do understand. And when we talk about using symbolism and then discarding what is not useful to the overall narrative, a lot of our religious practices inside Christianity and other major religions have to do with co-opting local community practice and giving it another narrative or giving it another story. So this is, we're not doing what I'm laughing at, but I know that somebody feels that we are.
Somebody's like, what the
what is this? How hard do I have to pray for y'all?
I know somebody's turned it off already, but for those that are still with us.
Yes.
So I do acknowledge that transubstantiation is a Catholic view, and this was one of the things that was heavily debated in the Reformation. So okay. Catholics like Johann Eck would have the view that I just described. Martin Luther came along and said, no, that's not it. Christ is physically present, but in, under, and through the sacraments. I don't know how is what Luther would actually say, but Christ is physically present in the elements. And then other theologians, Earl Zwingli said, you know, like he started the Anabaptists, and his view was it's symbolic. It's a memorial meal.
Yeah.
And so that's what a lot of us grew up with, that it's this
symbolism.
Memorial meal.
Mm-hmm.
So then when those of us who grew up that way, treating it as a memorial of Christ, what Christ did, when you are exposed to the Catholic view, you are the uninitiated. And you're like, wait a minute, what?
Right.
They believe that they're actually eating the body of Jesus or drinking the blood of Jesus. And that's evidence. There was this kid in, it was a Florida college student.
Mm-hmm.
There was this big deal because the bread in the mass, he put it in his pocket and left. And he didn't think it was a big deal. But for Catholics, they were like, what? You stole Jesus's body? Like, what? And it became this big thing. Now, for us, it seems different. But those are the type of things that happen when you are uninitiated,
right,
when you're looking at the thing. All right. So from a historical perspective, humans have always been in awe of things that they did not understand.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, in many cases, chosen not to attempt to understand them, not to do the work of understanding them.
Mm-hmm.
And that has led to tremendous tragedies as we move through history. Particularly as we counter things that we traditionally call witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So witchcraft is this big umbrella term that basically everything gets dumped in that we don't understand as
right.
witchcraft.
Right.
You know, you have, you know, different prayers, or if you have a shrine in your house, that's witchcraft. Mm-hmm. If you're playing spades sometimes,
any
depending
difference.
On how church you are, that's witchcraft. But even in witchcraft, there's a lot of variance in what's believed. Generally, there's, I hate these terms. There's white magic and there's black magic. Guess which one's the good one?
Mm-hmm.
White magic is usually your protecting or your service magic. So it's protecting an environment.
I'm over it.
Right. It's ensuring the harvest is plentiful.
Right.
It's producing healing and things that are sick. Black magic is the other thing that people suspect. You know, you stealing children, you eating children, you're
right.
causing people to get sick and die and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Prior to the reform, there was this belief that the devil was at work in the world
for anything that couldn't be explained.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing. Humans, we don't understand everything. So what do we do with the things that we don't understand?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times this falls into the category of faith. But when your faith interacts with a different faith, you're challenged. You're saying, mm-hmm. well, is my faith right or is their faith right?
Right.
Usually what happens in almost all of the cases, my faith is right and they're the odd one.
Right.
And so prior to the reform, where you have all of these theological systems being built, you have all of this academic rigor behind your faith, you're encountering someone who is in the woods with herbs healing.
Mm-hmm.
You can understand why someone would think that theirs is more advanced than the herb healer.
Mm-hmm.
But the herb healing is not different than home remedies from my grandmother or whatever. Like, There are things in the earth that are good for healing. There are things that serve as laxatives and anti-inflammatories and there's things in the system that work.
Food is medicine. We understand that.
Right. So these things have been traditionally identified as witchcraft. So reformers saw this witchcraft as they were moving out into the world. So in the 1560s, Catholics and Protestants both began witch hunting. And so this witch hunting occurred in every continent in the world where someone who was believed to be a witch because something happened and someone in the village didn't understand, that person, usually a woman, in 87% of the cases, it was a woman. That person would be tortured to a coerced confession of witchcraft. Right. Now, the torture included things like screws under your fingernails, things like that. And when you're under that type of duress,
you'll say anything.
You'll say anything. Yeah. And so the only real proof that there was for these witchcraft practices were coerced confessions.
I mean, even at that point, we have to acknowledge the Salem witch trials, which were held in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, well, New England. And long story short, were based on the fact that there were unexplained phenomena, there were unexplained happenings, and a young woman accused a friend of hers of being a witch because she did not speak of these things in a fearful enough tone. And the authorities at the time kind of took that accusation and ran with it and witch hunted in this new colonial situation where you would think if you say you have the freedom of religion, ultimately, or people are coming here to experience religious freedom, it wasn't that free. So it was religious freedom with still within the paradigm of understanding that Christianity is the ideal religion to be operating with them.
Okay. So
their emphasis, not mine.
Witch hunting was everywhere. It, like you said, the Salem witch trials in Massachusetts. It was huge in Germany. They had, I think, the biggest movement of witch hunters. Not so much in Egypt. They didn't really hunt witches too much. They did not care that there was another group of religious practices. Shout out to the Africans in Egypt for being tolerant of other religious practices. All right, so back up. In the 16th century, early 16th century, Europe experienced this mini ice age, and the result was like this famine and then these really hard winters. They didn't have an explanation for it. They believed that there were witches at work. And so that precipitated, that started to precipitate this movement towards witch hunting.
Okay.
And then there was just the demonization of everything. And it's, this didn't just occur with other religious practices. During the Reformation, Martin Luther called Pope Leo X the Antichrist. Pope Leo X called Martin Luther the Antichrist. And then that started this whole battle back and forth.
Fighting words.
Yeah, everyone's just calling everyone's calling people the devil. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we see Antichrist so prominent in some of our theologies, because that became the insult for people, who, religious people. So they like calling people names, and some of those names stick. Heinrich Kramer. In Germany, he wrote a book. I don't have the name of the book right now. I'll try to put it in the show notes. I don't want to, though, because he wrote this book. It was a conspiracy of witches attacking Christendom. And this was a highly misogynistic view of women with slippery tongues abducting and eating children. Now, here's where we learned that the person, well, we knew this, but we see that the person who tells the best, most fanciful story is the person who writes the history.
Yep.
And so the tales in this book were so fantastic that they were shared all around. Everyone didn't have the book, but people are saying, you know, this is what the book said. And then someone tells us, this is what Amira told me the book said. And I can't, can you believe this? That this is, protect your children. You know, you got to watch out for these witches.
A wicked game of telephone.
Right.
Ain't nobody read the book, though.
But right. Okay. No one's read the book. So also in this book, some of the stories dealt with how lustful he believed women to be. Not just lustful, but morally weak and susceptible to the manipulations of the devil.
The women.
Of course it's the women. Because it's easy to blame the
it's
women.
It's so irritating.
I know. It's,
we didn't do it.
So
we literally didn't.
You got this mini ice age going on, and the land is infertile because the crops aren't growing. You also have problems around fertility of human beings. Yeah. And so this must be witchcraft. And so that's where we start to have this attuned view of witches where we have to get rid of them.
Right.
All right. So Christianity begins to expand its footprint, and people are starting to be encountered, and they're practicing witchcraft and worshiping the devil.
They're accused doing that.
Exactly. Thank you for correcting
me. You're welcome.
They are accused of these things mm-hmm. by people who are uninitiated. They exactly. do not understand what's
Who've happening. Never seen these practices before. And they are accused of these things by people who are operating under the authority of Christianity to expand their power. So you're not going to say, under the power of God, I'm coming to subjugate your island, and then I'm going to turn around and say, but your religion is on the same level as mine, or your outward rituals are as holy as mine, or as sacred mm-hmm. as my own are. So we've always talked about how words mean things, and you start the othering with language. So that language of the accusation of worshiping something other than the God that I represent, that starts immediately when you show me what your ritual is. That's why I think this, it's not even something that I think. That is why the widespread use of bringing people into Christianity, of making them convert, is almost the requirement of the intended subjugation. First, I have to bring you into this system. Then I have to make you believe that you are at the bottom of it. You are basically grateful for all of the hell I'm about to unleash on you mm-hmm. in the name of my better God than whatever you were doing when I got here.
It's so insidious that
it is. I mean, our ministry is trying to demystify some of this stuff.
Yeah.
That if you don't think about it, you participate in it unconsciously. Right. So this conversation kind of butts up against conversations we had before, like Black faith in America and the different things that we do, and our own traditions with venerating our ancestors mm-hmm. and how we feel like that connects us to roots that we're still really searching for. But why was it so important to shut down or to cut off these rooted religious practices that still travel with us, still show up in our religious ritual within our churches and within our different varied faiths? They show up when Black Catholics are in communion with each other, when Black Buddhists are in communion with each other, when anybody, you know what I'm saying, is able to do something outside of this. I don't want to call it cookie cutter, but it's like this majority mainstream approach to how this information should be processed. Mm-hmm. It's just not. We still don't live in that world. All of this that we've been doing, and we still don't live in that world. Like right. even right now, there's a grassroots movement to bring our Black spirituality back closer to its African rooting. And that's not just about, imagine walking in your grandmother's house and she's like, what is that? Why you got the hair rag on? You know what I mean? But it's like you're tying your hair. It's not meant to be controversial, but it is also a way that you can represent yourself and be viewed as whole. And that even that image in different environments is holy. You understand what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. We're getting back to it.
So the purpose of us having this discussion is because I want to challenge the supremacist view that the other thing is the witchcraft. And that's mm-hmm. why we use the example of transubstantiation, because that is other to someone else, and they could see it that way. As sacrilegious as it sounds, mm-hmm. they could see it that way, and it makes sense. So if you compare practices in, let's say, Christianity versus mm-hmm. other practices, you might find that they don't look that different. It's just that because you are initiated, you are able to explain them away.
Yep.
So, for instance, in Voodoo or Voodoo, there is a practice of possession. Mm-hmm. So what they believe is when an ancestor transitions, you can still contact that ancestor through that ancestor possessing a vessel and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're uninitiated, that sounds one way to you.
Yep.
Okay. Contrast that with the Christian view that you are able to serve as a vessel for certain spiritual giftings. So you may walk into a Pentecostal service or an apostolic service and you see people speaking in tongues or prophesying, but the prophecy doesn't come from internally. It comes from another source. That's not different from a form of possession.
Yep.
The object or who's possessing may be different, but to walk into, let's say if you were a Lutheran and you walked into a apostolic service where they're speaking in tongues,
you would be jarred.
Yes, because again, uninitiated. So you juxtapose those two positions, and how different do you really believe they are? Is it just a matter of you understanding what it is? If you look at certain altars and shrines that you would find in Ifa practitioners' homes, the altars and shrines are their reverence sites for ancestors that have gone. So you see this not just in African spirituality. If you watch the movie Coco, they had an abuela there, and it was of the ancestors. And the whole movie is about them trying to figure out, trying to contact these other ancestors, and then they find out, you know, who else is also on the abuela. Right.
Or even the example from Black Panther, when they go and he talks to his dad.
He talks to his dad in the ancestral plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's ways to do this, but specifically that shrine, if you are uninitiated, that looks like a different thing. Christians have a shrine in most churches.
Yep.
It's called the communion table. On the communion table, it's a table no one touches. It is adorned with different things. It, at some point, it has the elements of the sacrament. And it is a special, it is a holy place designated for a specific purpose regarding someone who has transitioned before.
Yep.
So the lens matters.
Like, it does.
And the challenge is to take off the lens and see it this way. We talked about witch hunters. We haven't talked about exorcists, which is the same thing.
Right.
In the Catholic Church, they do exorcism still, and it's the same thing. Whether you believe in it or not, like I said, you may be Baptist and be like, nah, I don't believe in that stuff. But for a Catholic, it makes perfect sense.
But, I mean, it might not be to the same level, but you've definitely heard you have to pray the devil out of somebody, or you calling it out, you know, or you're putting the devil under your feet. This is an example of subjugating a spirit to your will. And that's not something that, I mean, when you take all of the flowery language off of it, you are saying, how is that any different from putting a spell on somebody to make them powerless?
You're speaking things as not as though they were. You're using the power of the tongue. See, you can wrap it in Christianese, but you're not doing anything different
than what you've seen done.
Right. You may look at someone else's, as we said before, ancestor veneration as something that's witchcraft or of the devil. Well, what do we do with the veneration of the saints that Catholics do?
And even determining who's going to become one.
Right. It's like you can see a pattern. And the pattern is very simple. If you understand it, you can accept it. If you don't understand it, the tendency is to other it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the thing is the problem.
Right.
The problem is your lack of understanding and your unwillingness to engage it to possibly understand. You may not agree with it. Like, so for instance, I may not agree with transubstantiation. I do understand that that's a view that they have. I'm not going to say all Catholics are ridiculous for believing that, or that's not theologically sound because it doesn't align with my theology. That's just what they do.
That is their practice.
So how we deal with things we don't understand
is very important.
Whether that thing that we don't understand is medicine or nature or God. The reason why religion is important, whether that religion is Catholicism, Protestantism, Wiccan, Ifa, any of these things. The reason why it's important is because as human beings, we're always going to be faced with something that we cannot explain.
Yep.
And so when we cannot explain it, we feel obligated to resolve that dissonance. And that dissonance sometimes is resolved through the creation of a system that can explain it. Now, that system may be your religion. That system may just be, I am chalking this up to nature. And so that's why you have so many practices around the world that worship elements of nature, or that you see elements of nature strongly present in their worship or faith experience.
Inherent.
Understanding is an effort that we must undertake. we didn't talk about, like, I'm probably not the best person to go into different types of witchcraft. So let's do it anyway. So for the uninitiated in witchcraft, maybe you have a kitchen witch. Kitchen witch is...
I want a shirt.
Kitchen witch.
I feel like that is part of me, but go ahead.
So a kitchen witch does things like make food with intention. They're not putting, you know, eye of newt in your food. What they're doing is, this food, I am putting my energy into this food so that when the person tastes it, they taste and feel that energy. You can call that making food with love or whatever.
That's usually how we describe it.
That's a kitchen witch. That's I can't remember.
Whisperers.
What are whisperers?
It's like people who understand things that are just not easily understood. Like when you're a child whisperer and kid is going crazy.
Like,
and
okay.
Somehow you can get them to calm down.
You have this ability.
Yes, you can put babies to sleep. I know that's my gift. Like,
I should have called you a few years back.
Give me the child. Yeah.
So I don't remember the name of this witch. I know we have some practitioners that follow us. It's a witch that basically uses nature.
We have to get away from this idea that witches are inherently negative.
Yeah,
too.
I keep saying witch because I'm challenging you to think differently about this.
It's a fairy.
Yeah, so fairies are... So here's the thing about fairies. It's a different category. In Europe, fairies had abilities, but they weren't seen as a threat. Usually because they were small, they didn't do a lot of... So think about your Tinkerbell kind of fairy. But in other parts of Europe, the fairies got bigger and more powerful. And in some cases, the fairies are much bigger
angels.
Than human beings. Yeah. So there's so many different traditions around. And to me, it's fascinating to see the different things or the different ways that people explain the things that they don't understand. And so you have fairies, you have lycans, you have vampires, you have all this other...
Yeah, fantasy type stuff. But is it really fantasy? Because I feel like historically, in trying to understand things that were not understood, even if you did not have language for it at the time, sometimes imagery supplanted words. So you would draw pictures or you would somehow document and capture the phenomenon that is confusing at the time. Some of these drawings and renderings survive, and now we can explain what people were going through. A culture that was exceptionally good at identifying issues or happenings were the Egyptians. They would accord a god or some sort of spiritual processing to things they did not understand, and then to the things that they did, and they assigned those powers to those gods. Then a religious practice followed, a worship practice or some sort of sacrificial practice followed that. If I understand that you are in charge of the rising and the lowering of the tide, or you are in charge of the whole harvest cycle, then I'm going to honor you in that. When there was famine, there would be this creation of this other character that obviously made the famine happen.
Yeah.
And it deepened the story. They were telling a story and they said, oh, you know what? There's a famine minion that made this happen in these cycles during this dynasty. And really what they left was evidence for today's scientists to be able to accord those happenings to nature, to the fact that, you know, like we said, there was a mini ice age in Europe. They didn't understand at the time, but looking back, we understand that.
Right.
So now our scientists can say what you thought was the work of the devil was actually climate change.
I want to talk about some Egyptian mythology.
I think we should just do a show.
Okay, so anyway, that's not this show. Right now we're talking about witches. So there's witches who heal. So they use herbs and things in the environment to heal. Now, we do know there's lots of scientific data to show the different natural
remedies.
The natural remedies in things that we eat. So, for instance, to lower your risk of cancer, a quarter teaspoon of turmeric every day. Whether you eat that in a Indian curry or you throw that into a smoothie or whatever, the curcumin that's in the turmeric, it reduces your risk. There's lots of things like that. People knew this a long time ago. They didn't have the data to back it up, but they knew that I can put this on as a salve to heal, and the things work. And so to people who didn't understand how to do that, they're like, wow, this person is amazing that they can just whip up some oats and some honey and apply that to a wound and it heals in days as opposed to weeks.
Yeah.
And so that person, whether that's the witch or the shaman or the chieftain, that person becomes venerated in that society.
Yep.
And that elevated position grants them the title, the position, whatever. And they provide a service. This is another type of witch. Also, again, shaman. And
right. A doctor.
That's a doctor. It's an herbal doctor. Yes. Now we call them holistic healers.
Yes.
You would be considered a witch. You would, unfortunately, you would have been burned at the stake.
Dang.
If
and all of your knowledge. Look at that.
Right. So there's more. I don't know.
There's so much more. And again, we are just asking the questions. We are highlighting the examples. We are doing what we do.
Yeah. So that's really what we wanted to get across. Oh, we didn't talk about, because people are listening to this and it says, well, the Bible says, you know, such and such. So a lot of the stuff, we've couched this by saying that when you don't understand it, we've already had a show about biblical literacy.
Yes, we have.
And you don't just take the whole thing and say, God wrote the whole thing, so if it says witchcraft in the Bible, no, these people were understanding their environment, and there are certain things that they didn't understand as they were writing them.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the witchcraft references occur in Leviticus. A lot of them do occur in Leviticus. And what's important to know about Leviticus is the Levitical code is a survival code.
Mm.
It is a code given to a people who are wandering away from resources. They don't have major cities that they can get back to to heal. So in that code, there's certain things that you should not eat so that you don't get sick out here in the wilderness, i.e. shellfish, things like that. Like, we're wandering in the wilderness. Which shellfish are you going to pick up that you're going to have confidence in that's not going to make you sick?
Ooh.
So, like, a lot of the things in the Levitical code, if you understand that the environment and place that they're in at the time, these rules make sense.
Uh-huh.
So when you read, like, Leviticus 19:26, you shall not practice augury or witchcraft. The same verse says you shouldn't eat rare meat.
Mm-hmm.
We still doing that. After that, you don't cut your hair, you don't cut your beard for men. We still do that. There's things in the Bible that we want to hold on to. So like, you'll hold on to, it says right there in Leviticus, no witchcraft, and then you go eat a medium rare steak or you go to the barbershop.
And love it.
So
thank God for it.
That's not to say it's throughout the whole thing. You're trying to understand it in context. And also in context, there were things that they didn't understand.
Right.
And just like modern Christians or even medieval or post-medieval Christians, there are things about other religions that they just didn't do the work of understanding.
Nope.
And so it has always been easiest to categorize it as witchcraft, to keep everyone away from it.
Right.
And
to other it.
Yeah.
And to possibly subjugate it.
So we don't want to do that.
No.
For this Easter, as we've just gone through a ritual that could be othered and look really different to a lot of people, the uninitiated, we want to challenge everyone that's listening to view, as you are uninitiated, understand that about yourself as you view other things, other cultures. Like you said, there's a movement to expand African spirituality. Jazz posted in the group this week in Maryland that the popularity of African spirituality is growing. And that could be something that's looked at as witchcraft and things like that. But again, remind yourself, you're uninitiated. I don't know what this is.
Yep.
The least you can do is not other it and say, that's just witchcraft.
Yeah. A lot of this is just locked away in books. If you understand that, how we might have ever traditionally looked in our religious practices, Christianity was on the continent hundreds of years before Africans who were fully functioning were stolen. And if you understand that, just understand that in general, that by 1500 or 1600, by 1619, which is when we have first Africans arriving here, You have Christianity and Islam running rampant all across the African continent. Mm-hmm. If you understand that, obviously that means that you probably stole some Christians and some Muslims. Mm-hmm. There were going to be things that were going to show up in our presence in the New World that would look different to Europeans who are adhering to this Christian hierarchy, mm-hmm. where they didn't even know. They did not really know that we existed. Once they found out we existed, they othered us, and then it was subjugation.
Yeah.
So this is what we're talking about. There's danger in that, obviously. And really what we're encouraging, we're not encouraging a wholesale throwing out of your system of beliefs or your values. Mm-hmm. That is extremely intellectually, mentally, and emotionally violent to mm-hmm. yourself. We're mm-hmm. not saying that. What we're saying is understand that in a world with 7 billion possibilities,
mm-hmm.
the best thing to do if you're going to give any energy to it is to be tolerant, to seek understanding, and to err on the side of kindness, because people could other you. And if you've ever been in a majority group, you don't really know what that's like. You don't know what that energy is like.
Yeah.
But if you are of the marginalized groups, the groups that we have talked about and highlighted that should have a seat at the table when we talk about our overall Christian or religious experience, there has to be space made for, you know, just like if we can say that God loves us individually down to the hairs on our head, some of us really find comfort in something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand that that means that he is able to accept our love, our gratitude, our worship in a myriad of ways, you know, and it might look different. Like we keep saying to the uninitiated, but it might look different to you how I manage my relationship or participate in my relation. Ultimately, we're talking about you understanding how I love what I love,
mm-hmm.
you know, or why I do what I do. And the best way to seek that understanding is to not accuse me of being wrong out the gate. That you're not going to get anywhere with that.
Yeah,
that's all we're doing.
Right. We don't want you to participate in this supremacist idea that everyone different from you is worthy of being tossed aside.
Yeah.
Those are still people, too. Those are still God's people, too.
Yep.
And as Mira said, if you aren't able to be kind enough to people of differing beliefs, including those you don't understand that you may want to designate as witchcraft, we're not going to get anywhere.
No, nope.
We're not going to understand. Like, your stuff is your stuff and you get it.
Yep. Your temperance and your tolerance are very much appreciated. No one is asking you to endorse. No one is asking you to now do.
Right. That's not what we're doing. Nope. We're just asking you to be better.
That's all.
Be better to all other time. Human beings.
That's it.
Okay. For Faith Uncut, I'm yours, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.